Morning, everyone. By way of housekeeping, the Cood Video Company has inked a contract with Metzer Sound Company, where we were deficient, and we're going to try another video this evening. And since we don't know if our scheme will work yet, Sister Teddy and I are going to try to use her TV video player to get some sound, and we'd like to show the video on the 67 war, which we're going to talk a little bit about in our class today. So, Lord willing, we're successful in this collaboration. We'll try to do that tonight. So we'll keep you posted on that. What we're going to do today is look at what we call modern Israel, which is the time frame of 1948 until today. And tomorrow we look at future prophecy. You know, what we're going to do at the end of the class today is try to look at some of the suggested answers to the question, what has been the greatest witness of God in the nation of Israel, or related to the nation of Israel, since 1948 until today? And if we just think in retrospect, all the things that we know that have occurred since 1948 that are absolutely impossible were it not for the hand of God, we'll begin to understand what a special time in which we live. And some of us were around and old enough to know what was going on in 1948. I certainly remember 1967 and what happened then. The witness of the Jews between 1948 and today, 2004, have focused again on the Holy Land. I think the prophetic vision has been a little obscured in past centuries. In the plan of God, it's this day, this latter day, when these things would really come to full blossom. And we've seen it in our own lifetimes. The events that have occurred there are a sure sign of the mighty hand of Yahweh. God has protected his people in spite of huge adversarial odds. Now, I want to focus on this map for just a moment. And you'll notice in the legend down here that in the partitioning scheme of the United Nations, that the green area was to be under Jewish sovereignty, and that the tan area was to be under Arab sovereignty, and that this orange line, sort of boundary line, is what actually ended up after the conflicts of 48 and 49. So we can see that the Jews, even though they were in instant conflict with the Arab nations around them, I mean the very day, May 14th, that they were the better for it in the sense that they got a more secure boundary. Of course, this West Bank area, as they call it, is a severe incursion into the Jews' controlling land. So we see that, and they have over and over taken this territory and given it back, and we'll see that through these different conflicts. Nationalism and depth of commitment has made the average Jew living in the land able to endure the conflict with the Arab nations surrounding them and the ongoing adverse public opinion worldwide. So not only do they deal with this constant threat of death from these fanatical Islamic people that live around them, but just world opinion at large, save and except a couple of key countries, has been against them. This humanistic approach to government has been on their back ever since they became a nation. Without the support of friendly countries such as the United States and Great Britain, Israel would stand alone in their quest to hold on to the land of their fathers. Let's look at this one verse in Deuteronomy 28. Rid of my antivirus. I think we'll stop getting advised about that every day. Deuteronomy 28, Deuteronomy 28, verse 37. And thou shalt become an astonishment, a proverb, and a byword among all nations, whether the Lord shall lead thee. And that absolutely has come to pass. And in some cases, they've had minor persecutions. In other cases, such as Germany, severe persecutions. Although they became an independent sovereign, Israel did not receive any respect as a nation or a people. The Lord continued to push the Jews out of the hostile nations so that they continued to migrate to the land. The people came and the money came from other Jews around the world. Israel has had few friends in the world, but those that have blessed her have been blessed by God. Still, antagonism comes from the same old sources. Again, Deuteronomy 28, a couple of verses. Verse 15, but it shall come to pass, if thou wilt not hearken unto the voice of the Lord thy God, to observe all his commandments and his statutes, which I command thee this day, that all these curses shall come upon thee and overtake thee. And verse 45, moreover, all these curses shall come upon thee and shall pursue thee and overtake thee, till thou be destroyed, because thou hearkenest not unto the voice of the Lord thy God to keep his commandments and his statutes which he commanded thee. So we looked yesterday at this intently, of the seven times of punishment and suffering to come upon Israel. Anti-Semitism has certainly been more and more shown forth in the different medias. This is a Russian cartoon, and I can't read Russian, so I can't tell you what it says. But it's a pretty good indication of how most nations look at the Jewish people. And as we mentioned earlier, one of their greatest gifts, and maybe curses at the same time, is their ability to gain wealth and to be successful in business. And they're very, very good at it. You notice here that this connection between the U.S., which is this rat following the other two rats. Get down here. See his USA cap that he has on. Well, these are fat rats who are apparently in some sort of business. That's probably a banking book. And this lady has one of these carpet bags or whatever with her possessions. And notice where they're branded with the Star of David. And obviously, it's not a very complimentary picture of this people of God. And I can't help believe that when God looks upon this type of advertisement and this type of press, is he not thinking that their turn will come and the punishments will be upon them? He's empowered these nations to be over his people, but he will punish them also seven times for their sins. Almost the instant Israel was declared a nation by the United Nations, the hostilities ignited with the Arabs. The intent of the nations roundabout was to crush the infant nation and drive them into the sea. At this point, Yahweh Zaviath manifested in the military of Israel and defeated them in spite of overwhelming odds. Let's look at this prophecy of Psalms 83. And certainly this is not totally fulfilled, but it's a good indication of the destiny of some of these Islamic and Arab nations. We're going to read the first eight verses. Keep not thy silence, O God. Hold not thy peace, and be not still, O God. For lo, thine enemies make a tumult, and they that hate thee have lifted up the hand. They have taken crafty counsel against thy people and consulted against thy hidden ones. They have said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance. For they have consulted together with one consent. They are confederate against thee. the tabernacles of Edom and the Ishmaelites, of Moab and the Hagarenes, Gebel and Ammon and Amalek, the Philistines with the inhabitants of Tyre, Asher also is joined with them. They have holpen the children of Lot, Selah. You know, in studying we have a class in San Antonio, Brother Keith leads, on the apocalypse, and looking at the rise of the Islamic nations over history and their history and how they're a constantly battling people. The only thing that keeps them from battling each other is a cause like Israel. Otherwise, they are constantly fighting themselves. They have many factions. But the thing that they are focused on is this sore in their midst, which is Israel. And they would literally like to push them off into the ocean where they came from and do away with them. And so when their inability to succeed militarily under normal fighting techniques didn't work, and we'll see examples of how well it didn't work this morning, is they turn to this fanatical side of the Islamic faith and set these people up now for several generations to sacrifice their lives to kill other people. And we're seeing that today almost on a daily basis. In 1948, as they were about to become a nation, the pot was boiling pretty brightly. And I have several excerpts from the book on Israel by Brother Collier. And this is on page 120. And if you'll just bear with me, I want to read some of his comments. Under the heading of Israel Proclaimed, with the declaration of the infant state of Israel by David Ben-Gurion on May 14, 1948, the most important event in Israel's long, sad history since the final dispersion of AD 70 now took place. At last there was a homeland under their own control, although it was born of fire and blood. The official record of this great event reads thus, quote, the 25-year-old British mandate ended midnight May 14, 1948, when British High Commissioner General Sir Alan Cunningham left and all civil administration ended. The State of Israel had been proclaimed a few hours earlier at Tel Aviv. The armies of Egypt, Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, and Iraq invaded Israel on three fronts. Prior to May 14th, there had been fighting in three main areas. One, at Jaffa, surrendered to the Jews. Two, Safed in Galilee, surrendered by Arab Liberation Army. And three, the Tel Aviv-Jerusalem road, which had been blocked by Arabs at several strategic points, and the city of Jerusalem itself. David Ben-Gurion announced the name of the new state to be Israel and was appointed Prime Minister and Minister of Defense at age 62. Israel's first act was to revoke the British order of 1939 that limited immigration. The British blockade of immigrant ships ceased under the heading of the Dream Realized. Thus, the Zionist dream of just 50 years earlier now became the reality of a political state of Israel. The question in everybody's mind was, can it survive? The Arab Confederacy was determined to sweep Israel into the sea. An Arab postage stamp of the time showed a map of Israel with a dagger piercing it and blood flowing. However, in spite of Israel's self-confident godlessness, such an early demise was not in God's purpose for his people. The several Arab leaders were all jealous of one another and actually hindered one another in their anxiety to be in the forefront of the expected Arab victory. But the Arab victory did not come. To the student of Bible prophecy watching from a distance, the hand of God was clearly evident in that the way very few defeated the many. David defeated Goliath again. When it was over, it was sad to find that the victors denied that the hand of God was in the matter at all. All the credit was claimed for themselves. In 1948, there was 40 million Arabs surrounding 500,000 Jews. Not great odds under normal conditions. Israel had no aircraft or tanks. Israel armed by, sort of strange, but they were armed by the USSR through Czechoslovakia. Russia had an interesting way of supplying arms to these nations, not only very little to Israel and a whole lot to the Arabs. In 3 weeks, the Arabs were defeated, and this map that I showed a while ago was accomplished. Of course, the Arabs refused to recognize Israel's right to exist, and still do. Each time the Arab nations felt emboldened to fight with Israel, God demonstrated his power working through his people, whether Israel understood it or not. Even with the military support of the great powers like Russia, the Arabs could not satisfy their hate for Israel. Let's look at a couple of more passages here. Psalms 129, verses 4 and 5. The Lord is righteous. He hath cut asunder the cords of the wicked. Let them all be confounded and turn back that hate Zion. That hate Zion. Jeremiah 30, verses 19 and 20. And out of them shall proceed thanksgiving and the voice of them that make merry. And I will multiply them, and they shall not be few. I will also glorify them, and they shall not be small. Their children also shall be as aforetime, and their congregation shall be established before me, and I will punish all that oppress them. I will punish all that oppress them. You're going back to Brother Collier's book on page 131. We're going to look at this, quote, Suez Crisis, which happened in 1955. Soviet involvement. In the East-West Cold War of the 1950s, the Soviet Union and the United States of America contended for the favors of the Arab nations who control much of the world's oil resources. Soviet generosity supplied vast quantities of munitions to Egypt. This was manifestly the Russian way of trying to eliminate Israel by using a third party. In reply, Israel sought arms supplies, but Britain and the United States both refused to oblige. However, France came to the aid of the people under threat and supplied some valuable equipment. In July 1956, President Nasser of Egypt began his challenge by nationalizing the Suez Canal and prohibiting the passage of traffic to and from Israel. Previously, the canal had been under the control of a French company and could be used by all nations. Nasser's action angered Britain and France, and a secret plan was made for a joint action by Israel, Britain, and France to free the canal. The secret was so well kept that the Egyptian intelligence service was quite unaware of what was coming. Under the Suez Crisis, Golda Meir later wrote in her recollections, quote, the Sinai campaign began as scheduled after sunset on October 29th, and ended as scheduled on November the 5th. It took the Israel Defense Forces, the IDF, made up of reservists traveling in a crazy assortment of military and civilian vehicles, less than 100 hours to cross and capture the Egyptians. The whole of the Gaza Strip and the Sinai Peninsula, an area 2.5 times larger than Israel itself. We had counted on surprise, speed, and utterly confusing the Egyptian army. But it was only when I myself flew to visit Sharm el-Sheikh at the southernmost tip of Sinai and toured the Gaza Strip by car afterwards that I really understood the extent of our victory. The sheer size and desolation of the territory through which those tanks, half-tracks, ice cream trucks, private cars, and taxis had raced in under 7 days. The Egyptian defeat was absolute. The nest of the Fadian were again cleared out. The elaborate Egyptian system to defend Sinai, the fortresses, and the battalions concealed in the desert were put totally out of commission. the hundreds of thousands of weapons and millions upon millions of rounds of ammunition, mostly Russian, stockpiled for use against us, were worthless now. A third of the Egyptian army was broken. Of the 30,000 Egyptian soldiers whom we found pathetically wandering in the sand, 5,000 were taken as prisoners to save them from dying of thirst and eventually exchanged for one Israeli the Egyptians had managed to capture. Although we had won our war against Egypt, the French and the British had lost theirs, due to some extent to their ineptness, but mostly to the overwhelmingly negative public reaction in France and Great Britain to what was viewed as an imperialist assault on an innocent third party. Sounds kind of familiar. What's going on in Iraq? So we see that, again, we have Russia, USSR at that time, Soviet Union, supplying just huge amounts of arms to these Arab nations, in particular Egypt, in order to have them destroy Israel, this third party action, if you will. And, of course, the hand of God brought this to no conclusion for them. Now, we want to look at the Six-Day War, which hopefully we can see in this video this evening, and what an amazing event that was. Again, returning to Brother Collier's words. In June 1967, when the war finally broke out, the Arabs occupied all of Sinai, the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, the Golan Heights, and the old city of Jerusalem. When the Six-Day War ended, all these areas were in the possession of Israel. It could be asked, if these areas were so precious to the Arabs, why did they start the war that lost them? Israel's response to the initial attack was prompt. Within 6 hours of the first Arab attack, the Israeli Air Force had destroyed over 400 Arab planes, mostly on the ground. The same day, Israeli tanks were well on the way to the Suez Canal and were on its banks in 4 days. Most of Egypt's Soviet-supplied equipment was taken, many thousands of their soldiers were captured, and the whole of the Sinai Peninsula was occupied. And I might say again, because it had been occupied before, but given up, including the oil fields. Egypt lost 10,000 soldiers in the desert. On the eastern front, the Jordanians shelled western Jerusalem, but within 2 days were beaten back to the River Jordan, losing the old city and the whole of Judea and Samaria, which is known as the West Bank, to the Jordanians. Then attention was turned to Syria. A very difficult 2 days sufficed with Syria, and Syria begged the United Nations to arrange a truce. It had been a lightning war, but a cruel one. Both sides suffered heavy losses. The question was, will the Arabs sit down at a peace conference to resolve the problems of the area? Of course, we know that didn't happen and won't until the proper time. That was a very brief explanation of an incredible event that happened, and I was about 17, and I remember very well. I also remember this Bible school in that year of 1967. I think there was at least 500 people here. So I think it energized Christadelphians as well. There was 15,000 Egyptians killed, and I'm not real sure if that happened in the first day, but throughout the event of the war, as opposed to only 338 Israelis. Moshe Dayan took Golan, the old city, and the Temple Mount, which was a tremendous prophetic event, was taken, and the territory of Israel quadrupled. And if you look at this map, basically, although this is the Israel today, and their borders are way back, as we know, they had all of this area in green in their control, totally captured, as it says down in the legend down there. Incredible time. And we'll look quickly at the Yom Kippur, this war of the holiday that happened in 1973. In 1973, the nightmare war broke out. From May onwards, reports had come in that Syria and Egypt were massing troops on their frontiers. Israeli reservists were called up. Nothing happened and tension was relaxed. By October, there was evidence of more troop movements, but Israel's leaders did not suspect that war was imminent. On October 5th, it was reported that the families of the Russian advisors in Syria were packing up to go home. The Israeli Army and Air Force were put on high alert. The Arab press was again accusing Israel of massing troops against Syria. The Israeli cabinet was divided as to whether a real emergency was developing. At 4 a.m. on the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, the prime minister was alerted that Egypt and Syria would strike that day. That day was to Jews the most solemn holy day of the year, and many would be fasting and at prayer in their synagogues. While Israel did not have the capacity and the ability to make a preemptive strike, this would be seen by the world as aggression and would sure to alienate world opinion. The Yom Kippur War burst on the nation just after midday on both fronts at the same time. At first, things went badly for Israel. The enemy advanced. It looked like being a long war, and Israel needed supplies urgently. President Nixon of the United States personally urged the sending of ammunition, tanks, clothing, and rockets and medical supplies. These were sent by a shuttle service of planes that sometimes arrived every 15 minutes. When the war seemed almost lost, the tide turned. The Syrians were pushed back almost to Damascus, and the Egyptians were chased over the Suez Canal almost to Cairo. When a Christadelphian said to a Jewish, in commenting on the way that Israel had beaten back her enemies, "Hasn't God been good to you? Hasn't God been good to you?" And she replied angrily, "It's nothing to do with God. It's our strong arm that did it." Although a miracle had happened again, it was not seen in that light by most of the people of Israel. And as we know, this primarily secular people still have that same opinion. But God's plan is sure, and it will happen. Israel took Arab lands in most of the conflicts. However, they were pressured by the nations of the world to surrender those areas in an effort to appease the Arabs. Just as Yahweh had demonstrated the witness of Israel in the land since 1948, He is witnessing through the Jews in the diaspora. He has used the monetary gift and gifts of understanding of science, principally in physics, to witness the control He maintains on the powers of the earth. And we talked about that yesterday. By money and power, man does man operate. Well, that's the language of man. Let's look again at Deuteronomy 8. Be reminded of those things. Verse 18. "But thou shalt remember the Lord thy God, for it is He that giveth thee power to get wealth, that He may establish His covenant, which He sware unto thy fathers, as it is to this day." And chapter 15, verse 6. "For the Lord thy God bless thee, as He promised thee, and thou shalt lend unto many nations, but thou shalt not borrow, and thou shalt reign over many nations, but they shall not reign over thee." So they have two great witnesses that they can look at. First, their success in wealth over many a long time, and also the mighty hand of God in delivering them from their multitudinous enemies around them. And they'll understand that one day. Now, I have a series of statistics that sort of demonstrate what's been going on with the Jewish people in these latter times, in the latter days. And those nations, principally Britain and United States, who have been so supportive of Israel, almost when no one else would help them, have been blessed also at the same time. Interesting numbers. This is the Jewish population of the world as of 1996, so it's not real current. But look how many Jews there were in 1996 in the United States. Almost as many that died in Germany during World War II. 5,900,000. I'm sure there's well over 6 million now. And then Israel, second with the total number of Jews, 4,600,000. Again, that's as of 1996, giving a grand total of all these nations, at least according to this census, of 13 million. This shows the rise of the population of the Jewish population in the U.S. From 1790 to 1990. In 1790, there were only 1,350, roughly 0.03%. 1990, at the this 5,900,000 number, 2.2%. So obviously they have grown and flourished, and their numbers have greatly increased in this country. Just a note of there are many sects of the Jews, as we know, from the ultra conservative Orthodox to the Reform. The Reform being the greatest percentage at 41. In terms of money and power, this has to do with education, which is there's a definite correlation with wealth and education, and you can see the numbers there, very high. Interesting numbers relative to books. The characteristic of readership strong in these people, and you can see how strong their numbers are there. Percentage of Jewish senior executives in Fortune 500 companies. Notice that their ranks are very high relative to their overall numbers. In publishing, financial services, they've always been in banking. These people have been very, very strong in banking for centuries. Textiles, retail chains, supermarket chains, and apparel. And I know they've been in the clothing business forever. So, relative to average household income, and using the 100 median, I guess you'd say, U.S. average, the Jewish people would be on the high scale at 172. Interesting, just above the Japanese. Values of securities owned, stocks and bonds and that sort of thing. Again, a very high percentage in the Jewish people. This is an interesting statistic. Twenty of the wealthiest and most influential Jewish businessmen in America, and this is not the whole 20, they meet twice a year. I'm not sure what they discuss, but I'm sure it's things relative to their common needs and to Israel itself. Notice Steven Spielberg, who is one of the principal owners of DreamWorks. These are very, not only wealthy people, these are very politically influential people. And they do influence the politics of this country as well as Israel. Tremendously big contributors to their people. Now, for the next few minutes, we want to focus on this question that I ask, and I've gotten a few responses to that. And I'll put those up, the ones that I've heard and also thought about myself, and see if we need to add any others, or maybe we missed the story altogether. The actual rebirth of the nation, the fulfillment of, part of the fulfillment of Ezekiel 37. In 1948, in the rebirth of the nation of Israel. The 67 Six-Day War, credibly, without the hand of God, there is no way that any nation could do what Israel did during that conflict. And then the Yom Kippur War, which wasn't quite as dramatic as the Six-Day War, yet again, they came back seemingly from apparent defeat and conquered these nations. And then the fulfillment of the prophecy of the land blossoming like the rose, the agricultural accomplishments that happened. I think it was the Turks, I believe, that totally finished destroying the vegetation in Israel and made it as arid as it is, for it once had great vegetation. And now the Jews have come back and have greened it back up again with their agricultural, their very innovative ways of irrigating, using very little water to its greatest benefit. And so truly this has been a fulfillment of prophecy in the land recovering. Just the mere survival of a nation which has so much conflict and so much public opinion against it, and so much constant danger all around them, that they've had to develop very good intelligence capabilities, and they have their people have to be totally committed to this conscription that they have in service to their armies, women and men alike, truly is a great witness. You know, when we look at prophecy, a lot of times we get a little astray looking at other parts of the world, and the Bible does speak to other parts of the world in fulfillment of Bible prophecy, but it really focuses on God's people Israel, on this land that He promised. This is where we really need to keep our focus, particularly now we need to keep our focus, and more especially on Jerusalem, and more especially on the Temple Mount. So, you know, we need to keep that focus. And what's happened since 1897 with the Zionist Congress is that we have been brought back into that focus. We have made the promised land the focus of prophecy. And we need to keep that focus until Christ returns. So I might just open it up. Do we miss any great witnessing? Brother Pat? Okay, the establishment, rebirth of the nation, fulfillment of his, the regathering. Okay, very good point. Okay, anybody else? Is that it? Sister Teddy? Okay, if I understood you right, the Catholic Church, with their banking system, has pushed the Jewish people into being bankers. Oh, okay, limited. Okay. All right. Oh, yeah, they kill the Lord's Messiah. And that's a very good point. You know, they're... We haven't talked about that this week, obviously, but there is 1 billion Catholics, just like there's about 1 billion Islamic people in the world. And when we mentioned about the Kaiser had tried to strike a deal with both the Jews and the Catholics so that, you know, in the case of the Catholics, the Pope could get control of Jerusalem. They've been trying to make Jerusalem an international city for a long time. And it's obviously the you know, foremost in the minds of Catholics, Islam, and the Jews. And you can just look at the shrines and all of the, obviously, the attention that has been given to Jerusalem. The Crusades is a very good example of this ongoing interest in Jerusalem. Any others? Brother Jimmy?
Thank you.
So the indigenous animals that were no longer there were basically destroyed, they brought back? Okay. Okay, so some of the original animals that lived in Israel have been replenished. I really didn't know that. That's very interesting. And also the satellites that they put up, their technology. Incredible. Any others? Yes, Brother Harold. I think some of them went to Baghdad. But you're right.
Also, Israel has had more people graduate from MIT than any other nation except the U.S. That's one reason they put these satellites up. Also, they were one of the first six nations who, although they adamantly denied, have nuclear weapons.
Yeah, they're very respected for that power that they've. Again, this is the hand of God that has given them these talents and abilities and successes and money and all the things they need, because it's in God's plan. It's His purpose, and He's gonna see it happen, even if they don't understand that He's the one that's making it happen, and they don't, not very well. Well, thank you again for your comments, and Lord willing, tomorrow we'll look at some future prophecy. Thank you.